So today is an extraordinary day because it's the appearance of Madhvacharya. It's also the Rambhijayotsava, and also we have 12 verses. So what should I do? Just read the English for the first 11?
Yeah, you can read the English for all of them except for this one here.
Okay. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Okay, Canto 9, Chapter 5, Text 8. O Protector of the Universe, you are engaged by the Supreme Personality of Godhead as his all-powerful weapon in killing the envious demons, enemies. For the benefit of our entire dynasty, kindly favor this poor brahmana. This will certainly be a favor for all of us. If our family has given charity to the proper persons, if we have performed ritualistic ceremonies and activities, if we've properly carried out our occupational duties, and if we have been guided by learned brahmanas, I wish in exchange that this brahmana be freed from the burning caused by the Sudarshan Chakra. This is interesting because most people will say, I've done so many pious activities, we've given so much charity, we've done so many good things, so give us your blessings, you know. But the great sages, the devotees, are always saying, if we've done anything good, you know, please consider that. Maybe I never did. If the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is one without a second, who is the reservoir of all transcendental qualities, and who is the life and soul of all living entities, is pleased with us, we wish that this brahmana, Durvasa Muni, be freed from the pain of being burned. Sukadeva Goswami continued, when the king offered prayers to the Sudarshan Chakra and Lord Vishnu, because of his prayers, the Sudarshan Chakra became peaceful and stopped burning the Brahman known as Durvasa Muni. Durvasa Muni, the greatly powerful mystic, was indeed satisfied when freed from the fire of the Sudarshan Chakra. Thus he praised the qualities of Maharaj Ambarish and offered him the highest benedictions. So he's actually a good guy underneath. Durvasa. But he had to teach them, learn, he had to be scared a little bit. Durvasa Muni said, my dear king, today I've experienced the greatness of devotees of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, for although I have committed an offense, you have prayed for my good fortune. For those who have achieved the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Master of the pure devotees, what is impossible to do is the question. What is impossible to do and what is impossible to give up? In other words, you can do anything and you can give up anything if you get the Personality of Godhead. What is impossible for the servants of the Lord? By the very hearing of his holy name, one is purified. O King, overlooking my offenses, you have saved my life. Thus I am very much obliged to you because you are so merciful. Expecting the return of Durvasa Muni, the king had not taken his food. Therefore, when the sage returned, the king fell at his feet, pleasing him in all respects and fed him sumptuously. Thus the king respectfully received Durvasa Muni, who after eating varieties of palatable food was so satisfied that with great affection he requested the king to eat also. Please take your meal. Tirthasamuni said, "I'm very pleased with you, my dear king. At first I thought of you as an ordinary human being and accepted your hospitality, but later I could not understand by my own intelligence that you are the most exalted devotee of the Lord. Therefore, simply by seeing you, touching your feet and talking with you, I've been pleased and have become obliged to you." So that's this one, right? Prito asmi anugrihito asmi tava bhagavatasya vai darshana sparshanalapaya atit yenatma medasa pritosmi anugrihitosmi tava bhagavatasya vai darshana sparshanalapaya atit yen atma medasa. Word for word. Prita, very much satisfied. Asmi, I am. Anugrihita, very much favored. Asmi, I am. Tava, your. Bhagavatasya, because of your being a pure devotee. Vai, indeed. Darshana, by seeing you. Sparshana, and touching your feet. Alapai, by talking with you. Atityena, by your hospitality. Atmamedasa, by my own intelligence. I'm very pleased with you, my dear king. At first I thought of you as an ordinary human being and accepted your hospitality. But later I could understand by my own intelligence that you are the most exalted devotee of the Lord. Therefore, simply by seeing you, touching your feet, and talking with you, I've been pleased and have become obliged to you. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. And this is the most important thing. It is said, Vaishnavara Kriya Mudra Vigyeha Na Bhujaya. Even a very intelligent man cannot understand the activities of a pure Vaishnava. Therefore, because Dhruva, Durvasa Muni, was a great mystic yogi, he first mistook Maharaj Ambarish for an ordinary human being and wanted to punish him. Such is the mistaken observation of a Vaishnava. When Durvasa Muni was persecuted by the Sudarshan Chakra, however, his intelligence developed. Therefore, the word Atmamedasa is used to indicate that by his personal experience, he would understand how great a Vaishnava the king was. When Durvasa Muni was chased by the Sudarshan Chakra, he wanted to take shelter of Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva. And he was even able to go to the spiritual world, meet the personality of Godhead, and talk with him face to face. Yet he was unable to be rescued from the attack of the Sudarshan Chakra. Thus he could understand the influence of a Vaishnava by personal experience. Durvasa Muni was certainly a great yogi and a very learned brahmana. Yet despite his being a real yogi, he was unable to understand the influence of a Vaishnava. Therefore it is said, Vaishnavara Kriya Mudra Vigyeha Na Bhujaya. Even the most learned person cannot understand the value of a Vaishnava. Therefore, there is always a possibility for so-called gyanis and yogis to be mistaken when studying the character of a Vaishnava. A Vaishnava can be understood by how much he is favored by the Supreme Personality of Godhead in terms of his inconceivable activities. Om Gana Timirandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chaksura Militanyena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam rupa kadamayam dadate swaparantikam Vandeham shiguru shiyutta padakamalam Shigurun vaishnavamscha Shri rupam sadradatam sahagana raganathanvitam Tam sajivam sadvetam sabadutam padijana sahita Krishna chaitanya devam Shri Shri Radha Krishna padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakan Vitamscha Nama Om Vishnupadaya Krishna Pristaya Bhutale Shrimati Bhakti Vedanta Swamini Iti Namane Namaste Sarasati Deve Gauravani Pracharane Nirvisesha Sunyavadi Paschacha Desa Tarane Vancha Kalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Namo Mahabharanyaya Krishna Prema Pradayate Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namani Gora Twishe Namaha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopita Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Jayatam Surato Pangor Mama Mandir Matergati Mat Sarvasya Padambojo Shri Shri Radha Madana Mohano Divyad Kalpa Drumada Shriman Ratnagara Singhasanisto Shri Shri Radha Shila Govinda Devo Prestailibi Sevimano Smarami Shriman Rasa Rasarambi Vanksibita Tatastitaha Karshan Venu Sanaya Gopi Gopinatha Shiestunaha Tapta Kanchana Gaurange Radhe Vrindavanishri Vishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye. So please everybody pray. I know you want to hear something worthwhile. So pray that Krishna will use me. Because you're always thinking I know something. But only when we surrender to Krishna and he works through us, then we become useful. So today is Madhvacharya's appearance day. Is that right? Or just one of them. Appearance. So now all of us are being chased by the Sudarshan Chakra, actually, in the form of death. Krishna's Michu Sarvasyaham, I am death. But he's also eternal life. I saw one little cartoon, the Father Time was standing with an open coffin, and the guy's running on one of those treadmill things, and every time, you know, he gets tired and he looks back and there's the coffin. And so we're all like that. Death is waiting. So, but for the devotees, Bhagavatam says that for every rising and setting of the sun, another day passes and we get closer to death. Except for the devotees who are always engaged in hearing the glories of the Lord, because they don't actually die and leave the body. So Maharaj Ambarish was not afraid at all, and he didn't try to defend himself, but Krishna took care of him. And then Durvasa learned his lesson. Durvasa is quite a character. He's somehow partial Lord Shiva, you know, he gets the anger really easy. So, but if someone pleases him, like Kunti did, and even Duryodhana did, they serve him really nicely, which is very hard. He's so demanding in every detail and doesn't let people sleep, like even a queen and king for days. You know, just keep doing cooking and he'll demand a big feast and then he'll go out, come back at midnight and demand a big feast. But if they serve him nicely, then they get so much benedictions. Kunti got that, you know, that pot. So she could cook. We won't say the name of it because that name has become used differently. But as long as she didn't eat, they could feed any number of people. Very convenient, right? You don't have to cut up so much. Just cook in that pot and then it just keeps coming. Yeah, you don't have to get all the big pots. So it'd be nice. But we haven't pleased Durvasa Muni, I guess. So he's such a character, and if someone displeases him, then he curses. You know, like he thought Ambarish displeased him, so he tried to kill him, but immediately Ambarish was protected, and then Durvasa was chased all over, you know. So the lesson mainly is we can't judge a devotee. We have to be very careful. Better to, like I was just reading about my role model, Ramachandra Puri. You know, everybody knows Ramachandra Puri. So there's an injunction, you should not praise too much or criticize too much. But he completely ignored the praise and he only criticized. But the actual injunction is you should praise and you shouldn't criticize. But he had it backwards, so nobody liked him. He became more and more miserable. Mayavadi even tried to chastise his guru and Lord Chaitanya and everything. So that's to teach us, you know, be careful. We can't judge a devotee. We don't know what's going on. We all have so many defects externally. So we have to look for the service. That's what Krishna sees, the service we do. And that's the essence of our sampradaya. Today is Madhvacharya, so we're called the Brahma Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya. Lord Chaitanya chose to be in the sampradaya of Madhvacharya out of the four sampradayas. So Lord Chaitanya, he studied and he took two things from each one of these sampradayas. So who knows what he took from Madhva? You go on the Navadvipa Prakamana. Defeating Mayavadis. And? You know?
You can tell us.
The deity is eternal. It's Krishna. It's not a statue like the Mayavadis think. You know, it's like a radio or something. You just turn it on and you ask for benedictions from something, whatever it is, unknown. Then you turn it off and then it's not there anymore. Krishna's not there. But the Vaishnava, the deity is Krishna, and he's always there, whether the curtain's closed or not. That's how that kirtan is at night, and they know that. So they chant for Krishna. They can't see him, but maybe they see him in a different way. But they know he's there, and he's hearing. So they get enlivened. So he was very, very powerful, physically and preaching. The physical things are easy to describe. He was born, his name was Vasudev. And his parents were very great brahmanas. And from beginning he was extremely powerful because he's Bhima, Hanuman, Bhima, Madhvacharya. And he would never be satisfied. The mother had to feed him constantly. As soon as she put him down, he'd scream. So one day the mother had to go somewhere and left him with his sister. So he was crying and crying, and the sister was trying to feed him. And finally she opened up a bag of horse food, big, like 50-kilo bag or something, and he ate the whole thing. And the mother came home. She thought, oh my God, my son's going to die. But he just, no problem. One time he ate something like 1,000 bananas. Some kind of special banana that's especially big. He did things like that. Or 1,000 coconuts he drank. And when he was very young, his father got in debt, pretty big debt. So the guy that wants the money? The debt collector, the loaner, the bank. So he came demanding his money and they didn't have anything. So he was like 3 years old. He went out in the backyard. There's a tamarind tree. And he picked up seeds and put in a bag and said, here, you can take this, you know. And they watched him do it. So the guy thought, well, this is cute, but it's not going to pay my bills, you know. But he opened the bag. It's full of gold. Much, much more than he needed. And as far as I know, he didn't pay back the difference, but kept it as banks do, you know. So that he did. One time a big wrestler came, was challenging everybody, and he was older then. So he challenged this wrestler, "I'll put my toe on the ground, and if you can pick it up, then you win." You know? And the guy tried and tried with one. He thought, "Man, it was easy," you know. And he tried two hands, and he almost passed out, couldn't move it. So many, many things like that. Physically, when he was traveling, when he went to Bhadarika Ashram, his main follower was trying to follow him. He said, "You can't come, you know. It's really steep up the mountains, all snow and everything." And the guy was trying, but he said he was just jumping like Hanuman, you know, all the way to where Vyasadeva is, which we can't go there. It's very high. But it's not cold and ice there. It's nice. Because Vyasadeva is there. And then he studied under Vyasadeva, made his commentary on Bhagavad Gita. First he was telling Vyasadeva, and then Vyasadeva helped him. When he came back, his associate wrote it all down, and he traveled in his books. He wrote many books like that. He went again to Vyasadeva, made more commentaries, and came back preaching. He wasn't satisfied with any of the teachers he could find at that time, because the Mayavadi was still very prominent. Ramanuja had done something, but you know, it wasn't finished. It's still very powerful. So he wrote one book, 108 Refutations of Mayavadi Philosophy. Anybody seen that? Huh? So he actually said, "They say like this," and he said exactly what the Mayavadi said. Then he just took it apart, how it has no substance. 108 different stupid things Mayavadi say. Jayapataka Maharaj made a book, 108 Refutations of Ritvik. Same format, you know. If you're any way bewildered by Ritvik, you can find that one. But so he, when he was traveling, different things happened. He was crossing a river with his associates, and the king was digging a lake, which was for public welfare. And so they arrested him and his friends and said, "You know, you have to dig to help us." And he said, "Well, we're just, you know, Brahmins, we're weak." And he preached to the king. He said, "You should dig. You're a big, strong Kshatriya." So the king actually dug, and he went on his way. A couple things like that. One time he was attacked by a gang of dacoits, killed all of them with his bare hands. One time a tiger attacked his disciple, and he just killed a tiger with his bare hands. He was not an ordinary person. He's Bhima. And I heard that he took his followers one time to Kurukshetra and told them to dig, and they found Bhima's club. And that proved that this was a place, but no one ever found it again. But these things can happen. So, not an ordinary person. And his teachings are very interesting, because we see that like this, right? You've seen that picture? And he's very big, very beautiful, you know, and there's many pictures on the internet. So why is he like this? Victory? A cigarette? What is it? Huh? Huh? Yeah, things are different. He preached the philosophy of difference. First difference is between matter and spirit. They're different. The Mayavadi say everything is the same. Another difference is between the Paramatma and the Atma, and the Jiva and the Supreme God. They're different. They also say it's all one. You know, there's no difference somehow or other, because the one whole, like an explosion, and there's pieces everywhere, and that's the souls, and there's no Supreme Soul anymore. Something like that. It doesn't make any sense. There's difference between different material elements, right? Like wood and iron, plastic and cotton and silk. You can go on and on. They're different. You can't say everything's the same. They're all made out of Bumirapo or Lo Bayou, but they're different. And they all have different uses and different sizes and shapes. And there's also difference between the soul and material things. It's not all one, that we're just the same. That's his five differences. And I was reading different things about his philosophy, but it's so much as exactly what Prabhupada gave us. Don't have to go over everything, because we're in that sampradaya. The commentaries of all the acharyas, talking to Smarahari yesterday, he's going to give some talk, and he's got all these commentaries from our acharya, you know, Valadeva Vidyabhusan, and they're all the same. But the grammar is different, you know, the sentence structure is different, because, of course, most of them were writing in Sanskrit in the first place. So then when it gets translated, you have the translator's language, you know, to deal with. But the teachings are never, there's no difference. Exactly the same. So we are indebted. It's quite amazing that, at least for me, maybe some of you are qualified, but to be in such a family, right, of our predecessor acharyas. When I was a child, like high school, I was thinking, why am I in this family? I'm so superior to this family. I don't know how I got here. I thought they made a mistake in the hospital, you know, gave me the wrong parents. But now it's different. What am I doing here? How did I get in? How did Prabhupada be so merciful that he'll pick us up, you know, from such degradation and keep us in spite of always criticizing devotees and always, you know, trying to enjoy the material world. But if we do even a little bit of service, Krishna becomes very obliged. So, anybody else know anything about Madhvacharyas? There's many, many things. There's books, you know, of all his different activities. But basic, and in any kind of debate, he was just like he was physically. There was no question of anybody defeating him. When he was in school, in the Gurukul, you know, they sit all day and chant slokas. But he didn't. He wouldn't play. He'd be climbing trees and just goofing around. And the teacher got mad. He said, why should I study? I know it already. Which is, teachers don't like that. I remember saying that to my teachers in high school. They didn't like that. I said, I read the book already. Give me a quiz. He really didn't like me at all. But so he said, why should I study? I know it already. So the teacher said, all right, you know, recite the verses. So he recited perfectly all the slokas for that day. And the teacher was shocked. Then he recited all the slokas for the next day. So the teacher left him alone after that. But he couldn't find a satisfactory teacher. He studied under many, he got initiated, Purna Pragya. But he wasn't satisfied with the teacher. There's always a little bit Mayavadi still hanging around. So he went to meet Vyasadeva. Now we can meet Vyasadeva also by Prabhupada's grace by reading Srimad Bhagavatam. Right? Anybody read it? Shruti read how many times?
10 years, 8 times.
In 10 years? 10 times, you said.
8 times.
8 times, the whole Bhagavatam. So if you don't, if you want any questions, he can tell you. Right? You remember anything? You know, you would, if somebody asked you, you'd remember. The super soul will give it. That's the thing. The more we hear, even though it's like searching on the internet, you know, if you put in the right words, you get what you want. So if somebody asks you the right question, even things you haven't thought of for many years, that somehow, Prabhupada told, I think, Tamal Krishna that at some point, you'll remember every lecture you ever heard and everything. You know, if you continue serving in a humble state of mind without false ego and without expecting anything in return and all those things, and just keep hearing and hearing and hearing, then it's all stored up. And all the nonsense we've heard is also stored up, and that keeps coming out. So we need to pour more and more nectar in. So one easy nectar is the Ramayana. Today is also what? Huh? What is it? Huh? Huh?
Inauguration of 24-hour kirtan.
Oh, really?
Yep.
That's not in the calendar. It's more important than Rambijaya Utsava. Huh? It is very important. Prabhupada wanted very much. Who was here at the installation? Anybody? A few were here. So, I was here, and Prabhupada had all, because the local people at the time, they didn't think that the Lechas and Yavanas were real Brahmanas. So if the devotees did all the installation, they wouldn't accept that the deities are installed. So Prabhupada had all these local people come. And they did, like, for 3 days, so much stuff. You know. And Prabhupada would come sometimes. But Prabhupada, he organized all the different temples, the different zones, I don't know exactly how he divided up, to do kirtan, 24-hour kirtan, during the whole ceremony. And he said, that's the real installation, is the kirtan. The kirtan of Lord Chaitanya's devotees is the real way to call Krishna and bring Krishna into our presence. So that was, I guess, the first. A few other times devotees did one night when Prabhupada was sick. But then Indra Prabhu, everybody knows, and the temple was undermanned, and, you know, it was very difficult getting visas to people to stay, and they could never keep it going. They tried. Indra that Prabhupada once said, 24-hour kirtan. So he packed up his little speakers and whatever he had, and he came and started chanting, and whoever he could get to join him, he joined him. And he built it up now to what it is. Quite an amazing feat. So we all indebted. And he basically saved, you know, our second generation, because the way the movement was so chaotic. But they all loved kirtan, even though they were not so happy about many other things. They liked prasadam also. So he engaged them in kirtan and trained them up, and now they're all over the world chanting in Vrindavan all day and night. So we owe a lot to these boys that do it, and whoever sits around with him, because a lot of girls sit around also. That we have this facility to just join a kirtan anytime when we're here. Now there's a group in Mayapur also. I think Ruski's, but they started in the Mayapur temple room. And they do the bhajan kuti also, you know, young devotees. So it's very important, because we're all supposed to be chanting 24 hours. Kirtaniya Sadahari, Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. So anyway, Lord Ram, this is the day that the war was over, when he killed Ravana. He could have killed Ravana any time, but he was teaching many, many lessons. First one, like Prabhupada said, he could, you know, why did he go after Sita? He could have created millions of Sitas. Right? But he was showing, you know, you have to be loyal to your vows of marriage. But then when he sent her off to the Valmiki Muni's ashram, he was showing, you know, and then when he was looking for her, the Bhagavatam says, you know, he was demonstrating the miseries of being too much attached to the woman. First he was going to destroy the whole universe. He was so angry, and then Lakshman talked him out of it. Then they, you know, they finally found her by, it's such amazing stories, but I think every, like, Prickit Mara, or no, Sukadeva Goswami, when he came to the Ramayana, he told Prickit, you know, everybody knows this already. So the Bhagavatam is just, you know, some basic thing, because the Bhagavatam is some katha and some fighting and this, and then mostly intimate rasa relationships and philosophy. Like the Mahabharata's mostly action. In the Ramayana war, the Mahabharata war, you get every arrow described and what it does, and you know how the blood is going here and the heads are flying and the rivers of blood and mud, the ground is muddy with blood. And, you know, satisfy our desires for violence. But those are, also know that everybody is just getting liberated from their demoniac bodies or whatever body they have. So finally they got it together, they found out where Sita was, and then they figured out how to build the bridge by floating stones, and these big stones the monkeys were bringing, like mountain tops. Hanuman tried to bring Govardhan, but then I think a voice came and said, no, they have enough already, you don't have to bring this. And this one is necessary for future incarnations. So he left it. We learned that lesson about the squirrel that was just pushing dust in, and Hanuman was saying, get out of the way, you know, what's the use of this? And he was chastised that he's serving to the best of his capacity, so you don't know, he might be better than you. And then there's some explanation how that dust was useful for something. He was just pushing dust as much as he could, where these big monkeys were bringing huge boulders and, you know. But Krishna sees everybody's service equally. He sees the attitude, sees how much bhakti we have, you know, not how much we do exactly, how much money we collect, or how many disciples we get, or how many books we distribute, or how many temples we build. That's all well and good, but if we're proud of it, then it doesn't impress Krishna. If we learn the whole Bhagavad Gita backwards, but we're proud, I'm a big scholar, and then someone does great tapasya, like we see some people doing around, they get hard-hearted, they get puffed up. I'm so austere. I fast on Ekadasi and these devotees are eating. They're going to go to hell for 37 million lifetimes. You know, the Hari Bhakti Vilas says, there's no one like me. Then they don't get any benefit from the tapasya. If one is humble about it, then they get so much benefit. So the battle, Ravana, you know, knew they were coming. So he got worried, called all his ministers and said what to do, and they all said, you give Sita back. We told you in the first place, a long time ago, give her back. You can't fight Ram, it's Vishnu. It's impossible. But he couldn't take it. He was so lusty, and he wanted Sita, and he just couldn't believe that this human being could be powerful. So he just got mad at all his ministers and said, you know, it's not your duty to give me advice. It's just your duty to agree with whatever I say. I'm the king, right? I'm the president, I'm your husband, I'm your father. You know, just shut up, do what I tell you. So they did, because they were loyal in that way. They didn't have power to go against him. So the battle finally started, and he was sending all his big ministers, big generals, and they were all getting killed one after another. His sons, who were very, very powerful, they were getting killed. So finally, on the sixth day, I think it was, don't quote me, but one of those days, he came out himself, and he fought with Ram. So he was getting smashed, and he was never in his life had felt the arrows of anybody. Everything was like flower garlands, and he just joke, you know, and he could defeat anybody because he had all this benedictions from Brahma and Shiva and everybody. So he thought, you know, he was very proud. So he was getting weaker and weaker, and Ram knocked off his helmet, which is a big insult. You know, he could have shot him in the head, but he just knocked off the helmet. That's how they do. We read about it a lot, and just humiliate them. And he broke his chariot, killed all the horses, killed the driver, and finally, Ravana was just completely bewildered. He didn't know what to do, and he couldn't fight. Couldn't think of anything, couldn't use any weapons. Whatever he took out, Ram would just smash it. So then Ram told him, "You look tired, you know, so I'm not going to kill you. It wouldn't be fair to kill you when you're so tired. So you go rest and then come back later, and then I'll kill you." So he went completely bewildered, called Kumbhakarna, who had just gone to sleep, so we all know that story. It wasn't easy to wake him up. Finally they woke him up and he said, "It must be serious, you know, what do you want?" And he told him, and he said, "Well, we told you to give Sita back. You'd give her back, you know. Just give it up." And he got again angry. "I'm your big brother, I'm the king, you know, you can't do this." So then Kumbhakarna went out and fought and killed so many monkeys, but then who killed him? Lakshman? I think Lakshman killed him. So, you know, and Ravana just kept getting more and more bewildered. Kumbhakarna was the most powerful of all of them. But all of his sons were super powerful. And, you know, finally he tried with, can't remember the name, Indrajit. You know, he defeated Indra. But he got defeated. Of course, Bibhishan was helping, giving guidance to Lakshman and Ram how to do it. So finally he came out again the last day. And by that time, you know, so many had been killed. And they couldn't bring the dead soldiers back to life. When Hanuman came with the herbs for Lakshman, all the monkeys that were dead on the battlefield, they came back to life. But there were no Rakshasas, because Ravana, being a clever general, every night he threw all the dead bodies in the ocean. So that after that, then the monkeys outnumbered them very big. Others weren't there, they didn't come back. So anyway, Vibhishan told him he has this life force here and told him where to shoot. So he killed him. And then he told Vibhishan, "Now you're the king, and you give him a proper state funeral, you know, with the all." Because Ram fought a long time with him, just to let everybody see what a great fighter Ravana was, but also to see that you can't beat Ram. You know, could have killed him right away. From as soon as he saw that Sita was gone, he could have killed him. He could have just sent an arrow and killed him. He didn't have to see him or anything. He's a Krishna, he's everywhere. So he knew everything, but he pretended he didn't know. So this is a very good day to celebrate. It's the end of the Dasara, right? What is this, the day they burn the Ravana? Yeah. You gonna do that? They're doing it all around, probably. They have a big Ravana and they burn him up to show that, and celebrate that he was killed. There's a nice article on Dandavats by Chaitanya Charan Prabhu. "Have you defeated the Ravana in the heart?" And the Ravana is like the personification of lust. And just totally controlled by lust. He wants more and more kingdom. He had thousands of wives. He's kidnapping all over the place. Solid gold. Kingdom. You know, the demigods, everyone's afraid of him. No one would dare approach him. But the monkeys did. They weren't afraid. And he was defeated previously even by Kartavira Arjuna. And by some monkey one time also, just wrapped him up in his tail and knocked him all over the place. But then he did more tapasya and got more power and got more puffed up. Because he couldn't accept that anybody's more powerful than Shiva and Brahma, and that Ramachandra is a man. People, the demons always get tricked. Like Durga killed that, what's the name of that buffalo demon? Huh? Mahishasura, yeah. So he had a benediction, he couldn't be killed by any man. And he figured no woman's going to fight, you know. But from this down the road we see that Durga is not exactly the typical Vedic wife, you know. Is she? With, you know, 10 arms and all these weapons and killing all these demons. not your ordinary Vedic wife. But people are saying now in India, which has the most wife abuse and woman abuse, rape, they say anyway, they're worshiping a woman. Doesn't make sense. That they should, supposed to honor all women, supposed to honor all men, supposed to honor everybody. But so then the demigods called her to, because she's not a man and she could kill this guy. Otherwise he's so powerful. So they get these benedictions. It requires great tapasya. But the demons are so lusty that they will do this, you know, thousands of years of intense tapasya that we couldn't do for 5 minutes, you know, and get all this power and then misuse it. Devotees also get empowered, but they get empowered to inspire people to chant the holy name and come to the temple and read the books. You get empowered. Devotees get great powers. I'm going to go to New York because it's so spectacular to see these brahmacharis there giving out these 7 books at a time, you know, to all kinds of people. I was there in the subway tunnel. It's the longest one, and they say this is the worst spot, you know. It's a really long subway tunnel. I don't remember the names of the stations, but... No, it's another one. Just a long tunnel, underground, you know. And there's nothing there. There's no entrances, and just a connecting 2 stations. And people are just running like anything and full of anxiety. And one woman came by, and she had a couple kids, and she got all excited. She said, hi, Haribo, you know. And the boy told me, she lives in a homeless shelter, and she took the 7 books. You know, somehow she had money. They get some money, but they can't afford to get a house, you know. Because to get a house, you have to have a lot of money, and you have to have a job. So they know the money doesn't have much value, but she knew this was valuable. And she was so happy to see the devotee. Their children are all happy, you know. So this is the power of Srimad Bhagavatam and Srila Prabhupada's books, that we all want to, you know, become empowered. Like here, so many books are being distributed every day. I can't figure out when they say this book table, that book table, where are they? I see the one back there, and then in the museum, they say Gornatai, and this one, Balaram, and then Radhakunda's party, and, you know, all these dynamos, and then Devi Shakti's shop, you know, everywhere you look. In Tirupati, everywhere you look, there's book tables. And people are walking away with bags of books and boxes of Bhagavad Gita's. You know, so many guests just taking the books. They just fixed it, you know, that this is what's going to save the world. We're not going to save the world but we should be good examples, but, you know, by not having plastic bags or something, that's nice, but until people change their consciousness, because they're always coming up with some new kind of pollution. We went to Govardhan yesterday, all along, so much plastic in the forest part. So many cups, so many bottles, so many bags. And people have no sense. And the ground, that's Krishna. This is Vrindavan, everything is Krishna. So when you're throwing garbage on the ground, you know, not very good. I mean, it's bad enough anywhere, but in the holy dham, you know, you're throwing it on Krishna. So be careful. Right. I noticed the sugarcane guys all had paper cups, the ones I saw anyway. But that's a step, not quite as bad. But we can save the world by chanting 24 hours, supporting the 24-hour kirtan if we can't join it. If you have a temple president, send somebody. Because whoever comes, they learn a lot. You know, they get a lot of fired up for kirtan by giving donations to Pancha Goda Prabhu, right? So he can keep this temple very beautiful. And the deity department, so many things. We can do anything. Sponsor Food for Life anywhere in the world. do kirtan even by yourself on the street. Anything is all, you know, this Lord Chaitanya's pastimes. And that's what, how Lord Chaitanya did it, how many of his followers did. They just chanting all by themselves somewhere, but other people would see this ecstasy and then they would chant. So there's time. I won't go over time like yesterday. I don't have such exciting family stories to tell. Mine are very boring. But any comments or reflections or any more information about anything?
Madhvacharya.
Yeah, the deity at Udupi. That's it. Anybody want to hear that? Huh? Anybody want to hear about Udupi Krishna? Not very many. How many want to go for prasadam? Nobody raised it. So, anyway, he used to go down by the sea in Udupi because it's by the beach. And one day there was a boat that got stuck in the sandbar or something. So he helped get it out. I don't know how he did it. Maybe just picked it up. But so he, so the owner of the boat was really happy. He's coming from Dwarka, and he had a lot of things, but he also had a huge chunk of Gopi Chandan in the front of the ship to balance it. You know, because he put a lot of cargo, so sometimes you have to, like an airplane, they'll say you got to sit in the front, you got to sit in the back, or to balance it. You know, if it's not full, they leave a lot of empty seats. They don't put everybody in one end. Cause so he said, anything you want, I'll give you. You know, give him. He had many times kings offered him so much money. He said, no, I don't, just leave me alone. So he said, I just want that Gopi Chandan. And they didn't know how he even knew he had it, you know, I guess. So the boatmen were trying to carry this Gopi Chandan off the boat, but they couldn't lift it. So Ramanuja picked it up by himself. Maybe at first they dropped it and it broke open, and there's a deity inside, not a big deity. And nobody could pick up the deity. Then Ramanuja, or Madhvacharya, picked up the deity and installed with great pomp he taught this incredible standard of deity worship. They still have there. All day long, everything they do, they put a flower, they have a mantra. Whatever they do, they put the garland, they put their mantras for everything. And all day long, they're doing something. Very, very, you know, the Madhva Sampradaya, and very opulent deity worship like Dwarpa Yuga. So that deity had been Rukmini's deity. Yeah, and then it somehow was buried in the Gopi Chandan. Because Dwarka just has these fields of Gopi Chandan. And it is the best tila. So he installed a deity in the temple there, and it's still being worshipped the same way. He established so many mats, and he established acharyas of all these different mats. And so from him, there's so many of the Sampradaya acharyas coming from him. Many were just initiated by him. I've never seen that deity, but he faces backwards, right? Because there was one sudra devotee who wanted to see the deity, and he couldn't go in the temple, so he turned around and the window opened or something. So now everybody can see him from outside. So he taught the deity is Krishna, the deity is eternal. That's its two main teaching. Because the Mayavadis, we know they don't accept that. We don't want to say what they think. They always say, I heard one Mayavadi speaker, and you know, they always get down to this punchline. It's not God, it's just the spirit. And you are spirit. And then they finish and everybody's, it's me. It's me speaking Bhagavad Gita. I always thought of it. That's what I thought, you know. No, why doesn't anybody recognize me? And it's Krishna speaking. So when we read the Bhagavad Gita and we're reading out loud and it says, give it to me, give it to me, then my bodies think it means me. But it's Krishna speaking, and he really is speaking, and he's the Supreme Lord, and the deity really is Krishna, so whatever offer we give the deity is Krishna. So those who can actually, you know, do puja are very fortunate, but even just seeing the deity, bowing down, chanting, anything is completely auspicious. And very much we get the blessings of Lord Chaitanya. We don't have to worry to get blessings of Durvasa Muni. We have to try to escape from the curse of Sudarshan by serving devotees. And then Sudarshan will cool down. We won't be afraid of death anymore. We won't be running from death. And running towards Krishna. Most people are running from death. They're scared. So they jump off buildings sometimes, they shoot themselves, you know. Somehow they really see death coming and they can't face it. The devotees are running to Krishna. You know, you have that goal in mind, we're trying to get to Krishna. We're chanting because it connects us, the beads connect us to the Goloka. Jai Srimad Bhagavatam ki.